La Lanterna, a spotlight in Italian football, is a podcast that dives into the beautiful game seen from the eyes of two fans from the oldest team in Italy's point of view. My name is Fabrizio Cardone, Canadian and Genovese, together with my friend Matt Killen, an American-born and Genoa fan. Every week, we'll tell you all you need to know about the only team you need to know about, Genoa CFC. Plus, we'll have guests and provide updates from around the magical world of Italian football. Benvenuti alla Lanterna podcast. This is Fabrizio from Toronto with my best buddy.
Hey, it's Matt from New York. What's going on?
So it's match day 30. We just went through match day 30, Matt. It's match day 30. That means only eight left.
Eight games. Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It's kind of bizarre, honestly. Like, the season has gone by so quickly. I feel like we were just getting into all the ins and outs of the league and how Genoa were going to look. And all of a sudden, you know, we're almost at the end. Pretty remarkable.
It's just the last stretch, and this is actually the most important one that we cannot make any mistake at this point. As yes. We said a few pods ago, it's in our hands. Destiny, rather than watching what others do, it's 100% in our hands.
Absolutely.
So the question is, do we have the right men? So far, so good. It seems like we're waking up. It's late in the game. While we also had a change on the coaching side, but soon enough, we're going to be overabundant with players. With soon, we don't know the exact details, but very soon the turn of Koda and Daramu, which has just posted yesterday a post on Instagram, I believe it was, saying, I can't wait to get back. Basically, he's kicking and ready to come.
It's amazing amazing to say that I forgot about Aramu being out with the way we've been playing lately, which is not really fair to him, maybe, but the results have been pretty tremendous. You have to say that. Like, it's an amazing run of form in this last match. I know we were playing Brescia that were struggling, but we have to talk a little bit about the recent news with Haps, which seems like the rumors aren't very good on that side of things specifically. But when you look on the whole with the rest of the side, it's hard not to be excited, I guess. And I'm saying that in the most tempered way possible, because I kind of don't want to get into the now we're in this crazy run. Kind of like you've mentioned, anything can happen in these last eight games, and this is a really, really critical period. But there's a lot of reason to be optimistic right now as a Genoa fan.
Well, absolutely, you're right. I can't wait for these eight matches to pass by in order to get it to the end and say, oh, we made it. I'm trying to be positive, obviously, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, a quote from Jeremy, our friend from Bari, the Brit guy that went to down in Puglia, is you cannot rule out yet the top two, even though Fiorentina.
Oh, absolutely not.
No, sorry, I said Fiorentina, but my bad. But Frosinone is at the top there. They were at a certain point, 11, 13, somewhere around. I remember it for sure. 11.
It was two match days ago. Before the match they started, they were 12 points clear of us.
Well, that's okay. Thank you. 12 points to the fact that we're saying you cannot reach him. As we say in Italian, irraggiungibili, unreachable.
Right.
But look at now. Now that got split in half. So it's 6 points. We are 6 points. Ladies and gentlemen, Genoa sits 6 points below Frosinone. So to Jeremy's point is, knock on wood for us, as Frosinone has lost so many points, can you really say that the top two spots are predestined?
Well, it's at this point, you can't rule any scenario out. Obviously, eight matches isn't a lot of time, and it's still a pretty substantial gap with eight matches to go. But we've seen a lot of changes in the last few weeks alone. We've seen teams jump all over the table. So you have to think, you know, maybe there's a chance that Genoa can push on and set the record for most titles in Serie B. But we need, obviously, to take care of our order before we do that.
This is actually, thank you for bringing that up, because there is this contentious. I was reading about that a few days ago. It's funny that you say that, but because I was reading that a few days ago. There's this contentious in on the net somewhere, especially there's differences between the Italian side and the English side. Essentially, long story short, is Genoa has, it's not important, but it's not, it's just for talking purposes, I guess, right? So essentially,
Genoa has 7 titles for the Serie B title. Like, you know, even though you get promoted every year, whoever is the first is titled the champion of the league, right?
Yep.
So I'm not saying it's like a Scudetto, but it's the Scudetto of Serie B, essentially, well, right?
They have 6 right now tied with Atalanta. Yeah.
Right. So, oh, sorry, I said 7, but essentially 6. Yes, you're right, 6. My point is Atalanta actually has 5. Why the British one includes, sorry, not the British, the English, some, wherever you're looking, is including 1 extra for Atalanta is because in the early days before the inception of Serie B, there was something else that is not officially recognized as Serie B.
Okay.
But it was like this. It was a second tier.
The closest second tier of the time.
Correct. Basically. So therefore, technically does not count. So if you do say Atalanta is at par with Genoa, it's because Atalanta, you should say Atalanta 5 plus 1 from whatever that name was of that league.
Fair enough. I think that's fair.
Winner, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Well, it's one of those titles. It's like being it's not that bad. It's like being the player with the most own goals or something. Like you have to play a lot of games to have a lot of own goals, but also.
I think it's a little bit different than.
It's a little different than the own goals. I know. That's very a little negative. Too cruel. I think it obviously be fun as a fan to say that we have the most in the competition and to say that outright. Obviously, it means we've been spending several seasons there to do that. But
that was my point. Exactly.
You know, it's this season, we have to continue to focus on ending the season in a positive way. I don't know if you and I would be like if we ended the season hypothetically, if we were able to close the gap and we were able to finish top of Serie B.
I'd be happy.
It would be best to do that. That'd be, as a fan, you want to see your team do that. But I'm not sure I would be that much more ecstatic than us being second and qualifying automatically for Serie A. You know,
no, you're right. I would be exactly the same feeling. The only difference if we finished first, it would reassume the fact of well-deserving to go back up.
And it's also, let's not forget this, a decent chip for our rivals who might be wanting to say something as we're heading back up and maybe they're going in the opposite direction. If we're winning the league, it's a different thing than, oh, well, you only came in second place and Serie B is shit and whatever. So actually now
I honestly don't care what they think about us. Obviously in Genova, it's a little bit different because you live every day with your coworker, your best friend, your partner or husband or wife that might be from the other side.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of a different story. But personally, even though he did mention that already, but our old friend, if you remember, David Farini from
Football. Yeah,
he does seem to be a little bit more in favor of the other side for whatever the reason is. And he actually, I shouldn't mention this because I don't like it, but he commented the match of Sampdoria against Verona and he was ecstatic about it. I'm like, okay, calm down. It's just like the cyclists against Verona that nobody likes anyways.
Right.
No offense to him, of course, right? Because obviously it's his job. But nevertheless, what I'm trying to say is like, I can really give 2 hoots if that's PG enough, but about what they think about us, because in my opinion, even though they are the second team of Genova, but it's nothing to compare between the 2. Anyways, long story short, yes. Sorry, I just had to ramble about that for a second.
I love how that's always like the ending point when we're talking about the others. They are the second team.
They are. Listen.
It's actually historically accurate for anyone who does not know. I mean, I'm sure everybody who's listening to this podcast knows that, but
no, exactly. Okay. So let me actually, you're right. And let's say that correctly. Genoa, and I'm not to toot my own our own horn. Genoa is not only the oldest football club in Italy, 1893, the year of foundation.
Yep.
Sampdoria is from 1946.
Right.
So that's, I'm not going to do the math, but like some 50 odd years difference, right? But I have to say, I was talking about this with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So I said, should I say this in the pod and whatnot? I don't remember where that conversation went. But essentially, what I wanted to say is, small history about the other team. Just if you are interested and you think you are pro more for that team versus not. But I have kept it from everybody up until now. But essentially, so they were born in 1946 in August sometime. Who cares? Whatever. But they are a fusion between 2 teams. Why? There were okay. Let's talk about the two teams. Two teams at that time were Sampierdarenese, which was it is a quarter of Genoa it's a suburb of Genova city,
yes.
Which got included into the city. I can't remember now. Sometimes in the 20s, maybe, or 40s. Having said that, on the books, then it's just an inclusion to the city, which is not the original city, what I'm trying to get at, right? Sure.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why we call them neighbors. That's why we call them guests. That's why we have a whole bunch of nicknames for them.
Yeah.
The other team, on the other hand, which is Andrea Doria, from a very famous old family from Genova, right. is from Genova. So this is the part that I kind of withheld. So let me finish, the fusion of the two things. So Andrea Doria was the more potent, was the strongest between the two, like the most right. titled and so on, right? Sampierdarenese, like what we say, some Italians might understand this word, pisquame, which is like this little guy, whatever, little pedestrian, no, you know, whatever, minnow and of team. However, in that year, Andrea Doria got relegated to Serie B. They were starting to be a little bit in financial trouble, while Sampierdarenese at that time was still in Serie A. So they decided to merge again because that had happened years back.
Okay.
Which then they split and then they merged for the second time. That's what I'm saying. It's like, are you really sure you want to be with that team? But anyways, it's like a whole mumbo jumbo of a whole mixture of things, right? So then they merged together. They decided to put the two names together. Andrea Doria thought, you know, the most elite, the whatever. So it should be a portion of my name first and then a portion of your name after. Something like Doria Sam per se.
Sure.
But then Sampierdarenese said no, because we are the ones in Serie A. So if you want to stay in Serie A and you want to merge together, our name has to be first. And hence the word Sampdoria. Samp first and Doria after. Part of that merger was to say we are going to merge also the colors. So right. Andrea Doria was white and cobalt blue, and Sampierdarenese was red and black. Hence the color of Sampdoria, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's why there's mixture of some people define it as like the most beautiful shirt kit in the world, but others say it as the most confusing shirt. Not purposely or not.
It's a Freudian slip.
Shirt in the world. Okay. That's the only thing that stems from the past, because because of the merger, everything from the past cannot be recognized in this merger other than the fact of remaining in Serie A. What I'm trying to say with this is, while Sampierdarenese is not technically Genova and or it's a quarter of Genova, Andrea Doria was a team from Genova. So what I'm trying to say with this is, remember, the merger defined that the two are not entities from the past, but a new entity from the future, meaning from 1946 onwards. If they were split, then I would say there are two teams from Genova, Andrea Doria and Genoa CFC, Cricket and Football Club. But because of that merger, it's a new entity comprehending a quarter-ish team or whatnot. I mean, fine, if you talk about London, there's like a whole bunch, but there must be team versus another of London that qualifies to be more of a London rather than a suburb from the outskirts
or whatever. Yeah.
Anyways, so sorry, long mumbo jumbo just to say this.
No, we don't like Sam. I always thought it never sounded natural when you say the team name, because obviously it's a connection with two different teams. It doesn't sound like you're speaking in Italian, because you don't usually have that abrupt after
you're right. In Italian, you will never say never, but you never see three consonants in a row. So MPD, Sampdoria, is not natural to the Italian language.
Right. It's not a natural club.
Let's start with the next match with an audio recap of analysis from Alex Pugno, which was on our last podcast.
Hiya, Fabrizio and Matt and everyone. Alex from Genoa Club UK. It was a strange game. We're in control, yet we let Brescia play a lot. You can tell by looking at the stats in favor of Brescia. Minimum effort, maximum result, best result, 3-0. What more can you ask for? Martinez is confident and makes everyone else confident on the pitch. Arbet is Arbet. What else to say? Great goals. Ekuban, he was often criticized, but he showed some awesome play. The assists were just, well, amazing. And Gilardino, as usual, had a great impact. I feel like he had everything under control. And generally speaking, he does have everything under control. So I don't think that break will make much of a difference. The players do follow him, and the players are enjoying themselves and giving it their best. So that's all for me, and I'll talk to you soon. All the best, guys.
Thank you, Alex. Much appreciated. Always appreciate your support. All right.
Okay, so let's quickly go first. Do you want to talk about the actual match day 30, or do you want to talk about the match?
Why don't we start with the match? I mean, this was an amazing performance from Genoa. I know when we were looking forward to the match and trying to understand how Genoa might do, this was one that kind of felt like, okay, I think I had predicted 2-0, but I sort of was begrudgingly saying that because you never quite know. It is an away game at Brescia. That Serie B, Brescia needs a win. This isn't a team that like is completely rolling over, and it's not like we were not going to take them seriously, but that was... We did have a little bit of that conversation with Alex in the last podcast, and I just think we really, really looked strong, and you saw so many different players have, I think, good performances. The standout player for me, really, it has to be Gudmundsson, just with how involved he was, but you have Salcedo getting the opening goal, and Salcedo and Gudmundsson later also connecting. There was an absolutely magnificent, like this... There's, I think Genoa put this on their Instagram too later, the highlight of it, but Ekuban had like a 40-yard pass that like freed up Gudmundsson, which was incredible. And I think he also had another assist with him as well. So it just was kind of really felt like we were in control of the match. I know the first goal wasn't one that came immediately, but when you look at this one, I think at the end of the day, it's a pretty comprehensive win for Genoa and a really good performance on the whole. I know some of the statistics maybe look like it's a little bit closer of a match than it actually was in terms of possession and shots and everything else. But for me, I felt like we demonstrated our class in a way that was not more than just we have more expensive players. I thought we were, in the end, sharper and created the better chances of the sides. What do you think? How do you make sense of, in the end, 50-50 possession, 5 shots on target to 5 shots on target, but a 3-0 win? Because it really didn't feel to me like this was super duper close game after we got that first goal.
No, I 100% agree with you with respects to the fact that it's not a clear state of what actually happened on the pitch.
Yeah.
I think there has been a little bit of shift slowly happening compared to what we used to see in the earlier, like up until a few matches ago, anyways, on for Genoa, where you would usually see 70, 60% of ball possession and very mere little smudges of goals here and there. Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to see, like, really look at the last few matches. We're seeing probably more goals in the last, I'm just going to guess because I don't have numbers at hand, more goals in the last 5 matches rather than the first 10.
Yeah. No. Well, yes. I mean,
or 15 even almost.
We keep looking up at the score sheets and looking at ourselves like, when did we figure out how to score? When did that happen? And to your point, like, look, the first half, that possession breakdown was very, I think that's also probably why we're thinking about the match this way. It was a 62% to 38% possession, 7 shots versus 6, so close enough in that regard. And it was kind of the opposite in the second half, but also like we were playing a completely different match in the second half. And
well, that's very similar to different a couple of pods now that we've been saying that. I think so. I do agree with the first half to the fact that I saw that almost at par, other than the difference of the goal. And yes. Exactly. So Salcedo breaks the goal, which we have to say that Puskas was supposed to be in the starting 11. There was an injury. We don't even know how severe it is. I haven't looked if he started training today because the team had started training today. Nevertheless, he couldn't be part of the starting lineup, so Salcedo got asked to jump in lieu of his absence. So a lot of smirking going around the fact that, oh my God, Salcedo is going to be starting. He is, yes, a good player, but he's not that good and whatnot. But basically, we have this cross coming in. I can't remember who it came from, but it came from the right. Andrenacci, please, I have my hands in my hair to say, oh my God, what kind of goalie is that? What are you really doing? I mean,
it was an incredibly bad error. Actually, Goodmanson was the guy that had played the ball in, I think. I think you can see what happened when you look at it a little bit slower. It seems like he misjudged that jump a little bit. And then by the time he didn't have the wherewithal to push the ball back over the top of the frame of the goal and out of play. And instead, he didn't have enough height or even, you know, a fist on the ball to really get it out of anything. So he sort of just like potted away. And at that point, as soon as Salcedo kind of gets the rebound, it's a sure fire goal. It was a complete goalkeeper error, in my opinion. Goodmanson did a good job. I mean, he gave the keeper something to kind of have to deal with. But at the end of the day, that was a total mistake. And for that to happen in the 45th minute in extra time, right before you're going in, you potentially are going into halftime nil-nil and maybe just looking to hold out for a draw in the second half. And after that happens, I think that also changed a little bit the way that both teams approached the second half.
Brescia, to their point, is they never gave up after the first goal.
No, they did not. This wasn't a cakewalk. I don't think the scoreline flattered us a little bit here, but
exactly. So yes, to that point, yes, it does flatter a little bit, but at the same time, in a way, the stats show that it was not a walk in the park.
Correct.
Meaning that Brescia, even though they lost, to your point, that it wasn't to the point of seeing the stats, and even though it was a 3-0, it wasn't that easy. It had to be, and we'll talk about it in a second, about the quality. And that's what my point was for your questions at the beginning, was why did we win? Was if the stats were equal, quality of the players actually made the difference.
Yeah.
So your starting 11 plus the benchers, which a lot of times are even actually play better than whoever they're subbing, amazingly so, and then bring once again, same thing that we talked about Ternana, come again, the revolution that Gilardino has in his mind, in the genial mind, to bring in these players, change tactics almost drastically sometimes, sometimes in a good way, sometimes drastically, as I was saying, but to the point of bringing some in players. And let's talk about the next two goals. Who is the assist man?
Thank you, Bob.
And okay, so your question before we move on to the two goals is, you were talking about Goodmanson being the best player of the match, the MVP, absolutely, hands down, no question about it. Even Serie B recognized that. He's actually man of the match of Serie B match day 30. In my opinion, on the books, I saw at par 3. Obviously, there is an edge for Goodmanson just because when he is going, he is killing it. Okay.
Yes.
But having said that, I want to mention three players. So the first one is Goodmanson, of course. The second one, I'm going to say Vogliacco. Okay. I've actually started to see some comments around, and I do not disagree about it, for the fact that they are comparing him to Gianluca Signorini.
Really? It's like the highest praise you can give.
That's one of the best compliments that in a defense state of play you can get, because that's basically ad honorem, the best at heart anyways player that you can say about, period.
Yeah.
So let's keep that in mind with respect to, let's see what Vogliacco does. I remember a few podcasts ago, you were talking about the fact that he started a little bit on a rotational basis and now we see him a little bit more.
Sure.
And I like this kid. I really like it. And he's not even that old, right?
No, he's not old at all. Four-ish. I mean, yeah, I want to say he's 24 as well. I'll confirm that. Yeah, 24 exactly. What this 3-5-2 has been really, really good for him, I think. I mean, he's been very much involved. You remember his kind of effort in the times that he's broken up plays in previous matches. And he's just not put in a bad game in a really long time. You know, he's not obviously he's playing in a back three. He's not a type of a player that's going to be really, of course, advancing into the final third. He's a defender. He's been very vital, honestly, to our side keeping as many clean sheets or low scoring matches as we've had. And again, I know we've talked about this throughout Serie B, but you know, the joint best defense at this point with Frosinone in terms of goals scored this season, for the whole campaign, we've allowed 19 goals in 30 matches.
And he's included in that.
He's absolutely included as part of that. And of course, we've had, you know, very solid performances from like a Dragusin, and Bani is also a fan favorite, and Martinez, of course. Yeah, very, very fair. But I think you're right to signal out Vogliacco, because he's really made a difference. It feels like the last like 6 or 7 games.
Yes.
It might be more than that, but it's noticeable for sure.
And the third one, I'm going to put Caleb Ekuban.
I think you have.
Because Yeah. We said that already last, exactly. Because of the last episode, we talked about him. The fact of that verve of quality / possession, physicality, and so on that he brought to the team, even though it was only for 8-10 minutes in the game against Hernana. This time around, he got subbed quite earlier, at the same time. So bringing him in, I'm still trying to get the minutes here, on the 66th minute, there you go, to replace Salcedo. That gives you, with injury time and so on, more or less half an hour. And do you want to comment on the two assists he gave to our double scorer, Goodmundsson?
Both of them were, it was actually amazing, because the first one was something I don't remember ever seeing him play a ball like that. But I still go back to the Genoa post, because they had basically, is like an eight ball corner pocket type thing happening in the background. He completely set up that goal for Goodmundsson. I mean, he did it in both instances, but I think specifically in that first one where he maybe was just over the halfway line, maybe just behind it. And another defender was pretty much stride for stride with Goodmundsson. And he plays that ball at such pace, but it's the right weight. And it just lets Goodmundsson run onto it a little bit more and get that separation, have essentially a one-on-one chance at the end against Brescia's keeper. And at that point, it's 2-0. Like, you know, it's going to be 2-0.
I just have to commend on the fact of the quality that he had with that assist that he gave. I think it's the one you're referring to. I don't know now if it's the second or third. I'm getting confused, but both of them were fantastic.
Yeah.
They seemed like these players have been playing, these player meaning Goodmundsson and Ekuban together forever. Ekuban just came after a 6-month injury, yeah, or a recap after an operation, as we mentioned a few times now, but like they seem that they've been playing forever. Gilardino just kind of quote unquote met Ekuban only now, because more or less he came in when
he wasn't really able to train, right?
Right. So yeah. Who is Ekuban for himself, right? But nevertheless, he brought him in, trusted him, and so on. And the repayment is wonderful. And that I can't now remember, I guess I said it before, I can't remember now if it was the first or the second now, but with that quality of assist with the external of his foot,
yeah,
passing that ball in depth into for Goodmundsson.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was like what you see with the top notch teams.
Well, that second assist was really special too, because he was, this one, I think they were basically in the final third and he had the ball a little bit out left. It actually reminded me, was it just the last match against Ternan? I think it was, where, because he had kind of a cameo appearance at the end of that match. I think he was subbed on later, like maybe the 80th.
Seven, 8 minutes.
We said. And it was like, oh my God, because he almost scored out of nothing. Remember, he took the ball to the, if you're facing the goal, towards the left-hand side of it, and then sort of fired off this shot. And he kind of did the same thing this time too, but he's sort of bringing attention, and then he plays the ball back across the middle. Goodmundsson, who's able to get a foot on it, make some control, and sort of create another easy chance to score a goal. It was some work for Goodmundsson, I think, to make that one what it was, because the ball was kind of a little bit slower pace-wise, but it was still an amazing goal, and it was it's just so much fun to see both of these players on the pitch having that chemistry and making that final kind of pass to really seal that goal certainly sealed the game.
If we give the MVP to Goodmundsson, it's also it's especially also thanks to Ekuban.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ekuban gave him, it's not two goals if it's not Ekuban there. I still think Goodmundsson, you know, deserves credit again for Salcedo's goal, but in the end, it's still
happy for Salcedo as well anyways.
Yes. So Haps had, I think, another pretty
strong performance about that
as well. It sounds like he is injured, and there's some rumors he might be out for the remainder of the season. We don't know that for sure. Nothing, I don't think, has been official yet.
Nothing has been said. No, we've only heard that he got injured during today's training session, and it appears to be severe, but that's all we know. We will know more tomorrow after the medical exams, which will give a little bit of a clear understanding of the length of the injury period. Some people are talking about 2 or 3 matches. Other people are talking about the end of the season.
End of the season, yeah.
Hopefully, I mean, it's the first rather than the latter, because we've just gotten this momentum with Haps being back after his ban and an arrival from January. Right. Nevertheless, one of the things that we have heard from the Venezia side was the prone to be injured easily, I say. We do know that there is, it's so sad and funny at the same time. We have waited for the replacement of Payet, and then once he's back now, we saw him in wonder, in awe almost, because we talked about it a few times, so there's no point to repeat it again, but mm-hmm. the fact of the presence on the left with Haps arrival was definitely a huge change. But hey, eventually, sooner or later, also Payet should be coming back too, right? So hopefully sooner if, let's put it this way, it's a lot of ifs here, but if it's a long, and knock on wood that it's not, but if it's a long injury absence for Haps, let's hope that Payet comes in soon in a good condition as well, though. Right.
I think, yeah, there are a couple of things for Genoa fans to remember. The end of the season doesn't mean ACL tear or a really serious tear. It's just the pure fact that there are 8 matches left in the season, and this is not that much period of time. So I it does not seem, from the little that I've read, that this is a very serious long-term injury. However, if it's a little bit more serious than 1 to 2 matches, that means a couple of months, and that means we don't have him for the remainder of the season. In concept, I think Mimi would have him back healthy for the start of next season, regardless of where we are. There was some debate on what we were to do. So Payet's obviously would be of early consideration if he were there and fit and everything else. But you kind of have two players you can play in his place if it's not going to be him. One is Crescito, of course. He's been back in the squad. We've seen him more recently as kind of a deputy type, 60th minute coming on, shoring up the defense, making sure, you know, kind of bringing that veteran sort of poise to the end of the match, closing the match out, seems to almost be his instruction. And then, of course, you have Sabelli, who has been playing more recently on the right side. And I think he's more naturally a right-footed player. I don't remember, actually, because I know he's played so many times on both sides. And
Sabelli's the right.
Of course.
Right back, yeah.
You would move Hefty into the right back position.
I think Hefty is back. I think he's good. So we'll be putting essentially Sabelli back to the left.
I imagine that's what we're going to be doing as well.
Which is not his natural place, but at least it's a good, you know, option.
Well,
good. It's better than nothing.
Yes.
It's absolutely the best option we have.
I don't think that it's a major weakness to Sabelli playing on the left side, but it's an interesting thing to see actually how the 3-5-2 holds up if Haps is indeed out for a longer period of time. Because you and I remember this, we were talking about this last week. It was probably a month ago when we were saying no more 3-5-2. It's not working. We don't have the right players for this formation. We don't have enough creativity. The ball keeps getting stuck in the middle part of the pitch, or there's too much separation between our strikers and our midfielders and all these other things. And it kind of felt to me like Haps's pace and the way he brought the energy to his game really helped enable the 3-5-2 to be so effective, because he was a player that could be almost an extra attacker. And we saw that in other matches recently too, where he's spending his heat map is almost more in the opposing third in some cases. And then you maybe have Dragosin playing up a little bit, or the back three rotating to compensate for that, if that's happening. And I think Sabelli obviously has a similar characteristic in being an attacking minded player. And that's why I think you think that he would be the natural person there. But it's slightly curious to say, does this really weaken our formation that has become, it seems like, our default in what we would want to start with most matches is the 3-5-2. It's kind of what it seems like Gila's landed on with our squad. So I don't know. I don't want to say this for multiple reasons, but I kind of don't feel as upset about Sabelli and Hefty. I would have loved to have Haps healthy. I would love to have him back soon. But I don't think, it doesn't seem to me to be a massive downgrade. Sabelli has his weaknesses. There's no question about that. But this is also a player that has pretty frequently contributed to our attacking play this season.
So are you saying that from the no more 3-5-2 to the yes 3-5-2 was only thanks to Haps? So maybe perhaps.
No, well, I'm wondering that aloud. I think that's unfair, but I remember around the time period where he really started getting regular minutes, it seemed like the formation made more sense. And I don't think that's a question mark in many Genoa fans, perhaps, that if we don't have him on the left side, does it look differently? But again, I also think that Sabelli they're not the same player, but they have in some ways some similar types of ideas. I mean, Sabelli is more likely to be a guy that's whipping a cross in from outside the box.
Yeah.
I think perhaps you actually sometimes see him almost more
I kind of have to agree with you. Similar characteristics, just slightly difference in quality, maybe. And speed. Yes. And speed and precision. I guess that's kind of under the quality.
Yeah, exactly. He's obviously not as fast. He's not exactly as known for always having the most accurate passes. But like we've seen plenty of. We remember the goal. What was the late? Was it Parma? That late winner from Puskas? Like that crazy cross.
It wouldn't be Parma.
I can't remember which match it was when Puskas scored the winning goal.
Yeah, okay, I remember. Benevento, maybe?
I'm a terrible fan. That's probably actually, no, I think it was Benevento. I'm pretty sure it was Benevento. But, you know, obviously he has that type of a quality. So if we believe you have the defensive kind of setup to help.
No, him. A lot of people are like hammering him for his mistakes or here and there. But I think it's the same thing at Pias. It's like, these are those
qualities. Pias is getting crushed for that same stuff.
Right. So these are those players that don't have necessarily high quality, but for the league that we are in, they are like tremendously important to have, because you can't have the best players in a Serie B because they wouldn't be with us, right? Sure. But at the same time, it's probably the best for the category. So I'm not complaining. I mean, from maybe three errors he does, the fourth one is that precise assist, as you just said, and it actually makes the winner. That was important. Before I forget and I don't get some of our fans angry, I wanted to say in command also our Grifoncini, which have been continuously giving us great performances. They did just win. They were playing on the same match day, essentially, of Genoa when we played against Brescia in the morning versus the afternoon, the local time, obviously. They played and they won 2-1 against the second spot. So I think it was Pal that we won 2-1, which still, so the third one now became second, and there's 4 points of differential between the first and the second still, with I think it's still 8 matches to go, or maybe less, still with the Grifoncini as well. Let us remember that for the Primavera 2, which is the Serie B for Primavera, for the under-19, top spot gets promoted directly, while the next X number of teams after that, I think is like 5 or 6, go into a playoff round for promotion. So it's important for the Grifoncini to be on top, similar to their senior counterpart, doing a great season. Obviously, the difference is they have been leading it for quite a bit, but nevertheless, even since the departure of Gilardino, they have never disappointed at all. So that's the important thing as well.
Of course, a very important part, I think, of Genoa's trajectory and their future. It sounds obvious saying that about the youth team, but I don't envision Genoa being a side where we are going to be able to spend. We've never really seen, I think, truthfully, 777's spending might, because they kind of came in for a January transfer window. And then, you know, obviously this season, the first full season was in Serie B. You have to be kind of pretty cautious of doing that. And there were a lot of other costs we had to offload also in that period of time. But it would be pretty reluctant to think that we're going to be spending these crazy amounts of cash. And so we really need to make sure that we're developing our youth players. And not only are we scouting and spotting the right youth talent from our own networks, but seeing these kids have success, that gives them confidence later on. You know, like that gives them a opportunity to think that they belong and that they can get things done. And they had moments where they made something matter and they won. So even though we're talking about, you know, Serie B version for Grifoncini, I still think it's very important that they do qualify back up to the top division of the youth system, and that our players can kind of look back on that and think about it as a successful season from both teams. So
let's not also forget that we have also had a couple of Grifoncini that were called up for the under-19 Azzurri. Lipani. So we had actually Lipani, Luca Lipani, that we saw him quickly when he had his debut against Spal, that played in the match against Germany in Bremen, and they actually won. So it's important also that he was a part of the central defense. So it was a 4-3-3, and he was in the central part of the midfield. And he was, you know, one of the players that contributed for the superiority of the Zurini against the Germans. So that was quite, you know, interesting and very important to see.
So they've been this little, our star man a little bit. I mean, we've had a couple of players that have made Genoa squads and all that, but it's kind of exciting also to see him. It seems like he's been getting the spotlight more and more from the Azzurri as well, which is kind of exciting. And to see him actually have a good match as well, as it just adds to that whole thing.
Before we go to break, let me quickly talk about match day 30 for Serie B.
Wow.
So it all started on Friday with Palermo-Modena, which ended 5-2. Oh, man, I don't know how much you've seen about that match. It started with Modena scoring and bringing them up 1-0 away. Palermo managed to tie. But then again, you have around a half an hour closing the first half also with Modena up 2-1. So it actually kind of made me think, okay, Modena, we saw them play against us not too long ago. You know, they're in the lower table, but whatnot. They're still like a tough team to go. Mm-hmm. Even though Palermo, we did see them, you know, to be potential, even though we talked about similar to Bari and Sutirol coming from Serie C. But, you know, it's not a team to be, it's actually a team that you should worry about. In fact, in the second half, they come back and they do the tie at the 47th minute. And then you see a bam, 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 3-2, 4-2, 5-2 with a penalty in the 79th minute. And Palermo brings all 3 points back at home. They were at home, mind you, but they brings 3 points for their fight and bringing back in a breather into the spots for the playoffs.
Unbelievable.
And, I know. Then you get, remember last podcast when I said to you that Sutirol could do the surpass? Indeed, it did happen. Sutirol wins 2-0 against Pal and goes now to the second spot, 4 points right below us. Pisa Benevento ends 2-0 for Pisa, really, to finally come back into the playoff spots as well. And which they kind of got tripped from last week, if you remember. Mm-hmm. But this brings them back in. Then you have Frosinone Cosenza. And what did we say there, Matt? We said, go Cosenza, forza Cosenza.
Forza Cosenza.
Made it.
What?
It's incredible. That's why I suggested to you in a chat, I said to you, maybe the title of this podcast should be Stranger Things Do Happen, because we said stranger things might happen, right?
But said that. Yeah, absolutely.
And essentially it did happen, even though it was right at the end on the, again, similar to the Regina match at the 90th plus 5th minute, Brescianini gives that win for the Lupi to give them a breather at the bottom for 3 points that they were not even expecting. So that's fantastic. That's like a really beautiful. And that, hence again, we'll talk about the standings right after, but it brings Frosinone, stops Frosinone. And with Genoa's win, it brings it to 6 points differential between the first Frosinone and Genoa second. Como Parma. Parma, super yo-yo. Like, oh my God, I feel for the guys from Parma. Lose 2-0 at Como. Cittadella Perugia. This was another match of our friend Jake that I was expecting them to show up a little bit more, but he did even say himself that after, even though it was a quite balanced match, it apparently it's just Perugia just had this win in the second half, that whirlwind type of thing, and managed them to come up front, winning 2-0 away at the Tombolato.
That entire part of the table is insane. I mean, that win was obviously a very, very critical one for Perugia. But when you also think about Cosenza, who we were just talking about, had Perugia not won that match, they'd be sitting on 30 points and they would have actually bumped Cosenza up to 16th spot in the placement. So having won it, they're actually technically out of the relegation zone right now, not even having even to play the play-in against the teams. It's every single match is so, so critical. And you really see that, especially in that part of the table.
100%. Then we have obviously Brescia Genoa. So Genoa wins 3-0 at Brescia. And then we have Ascoli Venezia, where Venezia, another yo-yo team, if I may add, and I'm sorry for our friend Marco from the Rigore podcast, but on the 90th or 91st minute, 90th plus one, Carboni from Venezia manages to win, which we've seen quite a few losses, and we were still scrambling to understand what are you doing?
What's Venezia? Happening? Yeah,
exactly.
Well, Venezia is still, again, another team that has a fighting chance for sure of staying in Serie B and you would kind of back them to with the talent that they have. But 33 points. To your point last week, though, we didn't really talk about the fact that Perugia also had a game that was postponed last week. So they do have a game in hand as well. But that was a must win. I think all these matches are close to must wins for Venezia going forward because of those exact facts. It's just looking at 19th spot up to 14th spot, it's a 7-point gap between those five positions, and many of them are on 29, 32, 33. So you've got a really close and anybody can get anything type of a situation down in there.
Next match is Regina against Cagliari, or better, Pippo Inzaghi against Ranieri. Honestly, I would have not knew who would have won. And essentially, when you look at the result, you're like, oh my God, Rafa from our Cosenza Club New York was right. Regina is in a free fall.
Total free
fall. And I mean, I've watched parts of the match. The first goal at the 11th minute kind of opened the doors for Cagliari, but not that Regina actually gave up. However, that penalty, which gave actually two goals to La Padula, bringing his goal count to the at par with Khedira from Bari, kind of like hit them really bad. In fact, in the second half, then you got another penalty, a lot of yellow cards actually in that match. No red ones, but a lot of yellow ones, to the point of the 30th plus one was just the last goal from Zappa to bring it to a 4-0 of Cagliari at Reggio Calabria. Last but not least, another match that we were hoping, if you remember from last podcast, and we had Ternana, even though we're not super friends with them, against Bari. So we were hoping for an upset from Ternana with our friends at Bari, and they managed to do so.
Managed to do it.
So that was a 1-0 win over the former third in the division. At the 19th minute, Partipilo actually managed to score. And it was a difficult match, essentially, because at the end, if you look at the statistics, it seemed that Ternana had the edge over Bari. Except for a little bit of a ball possession that was a little bit over on the Bari side, but the shots were clear. On target were 3-1 for Ternana, which one of them went into goal, and end of the story. Which brings us to talking about our table now. So Frosinone first at 62 points, mm-hmm. only 6 now, as we talked about 12 not too many match days ago.
That's right.
Is 6 points below, so at 56 sits Genoa.
Yep.
As we mentioned, we don't have Bari anymore in the third spot. Mind you, again, we're still talking about two third and fourth spot. We're talking about two formerly Serie C or Pro League, Serie Pro, whatever it's called now. I can't remember, in the third and fourth spot. So Sud Tirol now at 51 with Bari at 50.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a gap, 5 points below that. We have sitting both Pisa and Cagliari at 45.
Yes.
Seventh spot now is Regina, mind you. One game less, but we also have a potential 4 points penalty that might come into it.
Oh, and that's not even factored in the table right now. That's right.
No, it's not, because it's not official yet. Official. But it seems that it's going to go in that direction, but they're talking about a few days away for it to become official. Mind you, Pippo Inzaghi, except the Perugia, which is still has to be played, 3 losses in a row. Palermo.
Unbelievable.
Same with Regina at 42 points, so 7th to 8th spot, essentially. 41 points. So starting to be far from the playoffs spots is sitting Parma at 9th with 41 points. So that Gigi Buffon speech after our match kind of didn't help them too much in the long run.
It's incredible. I mean, it's been win, loss, win, draw, loss in their last 5 games. It's been exactly as he had said before. It's just the inconsistency there has got to be maddening for our fellow, well, we're not Parma supporters, but for our friends that we know that support Parma. I guess you could say that.
Absolutely. So Parma, as I said, Parma sitting at 41, Como and Ternana 10th and 11th, sitting at 39, 1 point below at 38 on the 12th spot is Modena. then 2 points below Ascoli sitting at 13, 1 point below Cittadella at 14 that got stopped in the last match, as we mentioned.
Yep.
2 points below them now is sitting at 15th spot at 33 points is Perugia, at par with Venezia sitting on the 16th spot, which is the first spot of the playouts. Mm-hmm. Second spot for playouts at 32 points. So 1 point below both Perugia and Venezia is sitting Cosenza. Now that was from the last, now it's sitting in the playouts area. Then 3 points below Cosenza sits Benevento at 29. 1 point below that sits both Spal and Brescia, 28 points, 29 for the last two spots of the table.
And it's amazing when you look at this table. So Benevento has all of a sudden also become, look at Benevento and Venezia, two teams that were in that conversation for promotion when the season began. And on the flip side, I know we've talked about Regina's downfall, and it's sort of been enjoyable to see some of that happen. But when you look at the top eight and you have promotional opportunities within those top eight, in one way, you have a play-in that's going to be a little bit more difficult if you're in five through eight or three through eight, really. But Palermo, Regina, Bari, Sudtirol, sides that were promoted up from Serie C, all sides that potentially could make the jump to Serie A. So it's pretty amazing to see how much competition we've seen from those teams. Actually, I'm sorry, Regina was not, sorry.
Was not. No, that's true.
But still, three of those four teams.
There's two different type of sides here saying that Serie B then is not that qualitative as we expected. And others say, no, it's actually qualitative, including teams coming from Serie C, right, which were not even factored in.
I think so, you have to say that, like, this, the competition is more balanced than in other places. You have teams that have an opportunity to make a decision. And if you want to say Serie B and Serie C isn't that far, I think that's kind of incorrect. But you do see definitely that these sides are playing and playing above their weight and having a good go at it.
I personally like it, and I wish there were a little bit more competitiveness coming also from Serie B up to Serie A. Unfortunately, we know that there is an unfortunate gap between the second half and the first half, if not even the top seven versus the remainder 13 in Serie A. I wish the gap was a little bit better, but yeah. You know, right now, that's how we see it. So let's go to the break, and we'll have an amazing guest coming right up.
My name is Fabrizio Cardone, and I approve this message.
Bentornati sulla Lanterna podcast. Welcome back. And we have now a special guest, which is, well, he is from Europe, but he is not in Europe. So he's in Michigan now. And let me give you a little bit of a background to how we have found him, because this is quite an odd and interesting and amazing, actually, begin of the story, because I'm going to leave it also up to our guest to give us more insight about what his whereabouts and whatnot. But essentially, so our friends from our sister, I mentioned a few times, our sister group called Genoani Si Resta, one of the members, which they're like a larger group than ours, of course, but of the Genoani all around the world, but from Genova. And they noticed someone that actually commented on a post-match, I think it was against Ternana or against I believe it was against Ternana. I see a nodding head. And which actually was in English, of a gentleman that said, I am from Austria, living in the United States, and I'm a Genoa fan, blah, blah, blah. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to Hamada, our new Genoano living in Michigan. Welcome to our podcast, Hamada.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, thank you so much, Fabrizio, Matt. Thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, and kind of the question is, how did we find Genoa? And I always want to say, you know, the club chooses you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, it's not something answer. You're just like, hey, let me check this team out. Of course, some people might do that. But I like to think football or soccer, as it's called over here, is there's romance involved in it. It's not just a simple sport for a lot of us. It's a lot more. It's become a lifestyle. And for me, kind of, you see the logo, you see the flags, you see the colors, and you just, something attracts you to it. So for me, the club just chose me. I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice, but I chose to go along with it. You know, I'm like, this team is flirting with me. It's giving me those looks, you know, and it's like, hey, what are you up to? And I'm like, hey, back, you know, so
how you doing?
Exactly. Something like that. So here we are today. Became a supporter, a follower, following every score. And the thing for me in football that I, when I go back and talk about romance too, is for me, a club is not the owners or the players, you know, because all of that, they become part of the club, but they come and go, you know, players leave, transfers in and out. They come back sometimes amazing. But the thing that always stays is the city and the fans, you know. And when I took a deep dive more into the fans of Genoa and the Granitada North or Gradinada North.
That's right.
I saw the flag. I'm like, these fans belong in the Champions League, you know. They shouldn't be in Serie B. And just the passion and the flags and the turnout still in Serie B. I'm like, these fans should be in Champions League, you know. It's Champions League worthy every single week with the flares and the songs. So that attracted me more. And then I just took a deep dive more. And the more I learned about the club, that it's the oldest club in Italy, and it's part of, I forgot the name, it's part of that association of all the oldest teams from every country.
Yep.
So the deeper I dove into the club, the more I fell in love with it, you know, and now I'm just following every single week, and yeah, I'm excited for what the future holds, really.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so funny. That's a much better story than me saying it started with a discount shirt that I found on Kitbag.
I mean, it's a valid story. You know, there's many different paths that people take, and there's different things that attract us to different teams. So there's not one right or one wrong. It's just there's multiple, like it's like an octopus, you know, it's like multiple arms, absolutely. And you attach yourself to like another arm, you know, so we all get sucked into the same club one way or the other. And here we are today, you know.
That's right. That's what it's all about.
No, I still think about both of you guys, your history and where you got, you know, however the club chose you, good words that from Hamada, and it's me being Genovese, essentially, it just makes me happy for the fact that, you know, the Genovese in itself, in the world of Genova, is not that well aware of, because they're not used to it, per se, to the world around them. But the reality out there, the potential that is out there in order to expand that fan base, that because up until yesterday, they were just used to be, okay, I'm Genovese, therefore I'm Genoan or whatever that the remainder of the other team is. But and that's it. But we don't like to talk about the bad guy. But nevertheless,
we say that every episode, but then you somehow talk about it a little bit.
Well, not as much as the Italian guys. Meaning our group over there is like, it's 90% of talking bad about the others and 10% about it. But anyways.
We should have done like a Sampdoria special, maybe at the end of the season.
An anti-Sampdoria special.
Sampdoria recap. We'll just focus on one team and how they performed.
But no, the fact of these choice of words that you had were just tremendously important. And I think they're so powerful that it's part of globalization, will you? Part of internet, part of, you know, the fact of more exposure, Serie A versus Serie B now being a little bit more in the center of attention, maybe because of some, you know, prime teams that have fallen down, for example, Cagliari and Genoa, or Venezia and Bari and Palermo and so on, which gave a little bit more of attention to Serie B, mind you, we haven't been used to Serie B for a long time now, for over 15 years, I guess it was a consecutive, you know, from a team from a smaller city compared to the bigger teams and bigger cities, even though, to your point, being the oldest, and never need to forget that we're still the for the longest, like since the 20s or a little bit more, I guess, but let's say for over 70 years, 80 years, we're still the fourth team with the most Scudetti.
Most titles, yeah.
Which, fine, people can say, well, there's the first one, so it was easy. Well, you know, everything has to start from somewhere, and you can't undiscount them because you either going to take them or you're not going to give them. And that means also other big teams have, I think AC Milan was the one that won the fourth Scudetto ever won. Mm-hmm. So nevertheless, you know, there's still like big teams that are even them from the start, from the get-go. Nevertheless, the story is there. And that's right. That's the romance part. That's a romantic, but that's the history. The last episode we had Alex that talked to us about his grandfather interacting with one of the co-founders of the club, which was just something incredible to hear. I don't know. It just gives me shivers in my sense, in my mind, like from the 1920s. Incredible. Mind you, Germany also has a lot of history themselves too. A lot of people talk about Bundesliga to be a competitive group and whatnot. And it's funny enough, when you and I, Hamada, started to interact, the fact that it was more or less almost news about Hertha Berlin being now the umbrella of 7-7 Partners. So actually in the last episode, if you remember, Matt, I mentioned to you, hold that thought with that type of expression that you had about how do you say something about in Germany when for the Hertha Berlin, their motto or something like that.
Oh, the Ha-Ho-He, the band chant that they do. Yeah.
So and I want to say, keep that tight. I want to see if that's true. So Hamada, is that true?
Yes. Yeah. It goes, Ha-Ho-He, Hertha BSC. Yeah. But what are the odds, huh? That
very funny. Yeah.
Beginning of the season, I started following Genoa, and then my first team that I ever knew of, you know, my first memory of my life is me playing football in kindergarten. The first game I ever went to was Hertha against Eintracht Frankfurt, who recently won Europa League. So congrats to another German team winning something in Europe, which is always nice. And Score was 3-0, I believe, that day. And yeah, they've been the local team, you know. I just kind of, if the club chose you again, you know, it was always meant to be, and here we are a couple of years, I mean 30 years down the road for me, and now these two teams are intertwined, and it's just the coincidence blows my mind, you know.
It is pretty remarkable.
It's a love story only football can write, I like to say.
Yeah. I agree. I like those words. Actually, let me backtrack 1 second, because we said, wait a minute, Hamada is from Austria, yet we're hearing about Germany. So let's go a little bit backwards here. So who is Hamada?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and people always have a home. You know, I'm assuming for you it's Genoa, and Matt, I'm guessing Toronto it's for you, or I'm not sure.
Well, I live in New York now. I've been in New York for 10 years. Yeah, it's going back to what you were saying earlier, the being around the New York fan club for Genoa here really helped make my connection with the club that much stronger. That's actually how I got introduced to Fabbri. But I'm originally from Kansas City, actually. I've been in New York for the last 10 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All over the place, too.
Yeah. I'm the one in Toronto. So when you say, am I Genovese? I am, but I'm also, I would consider myself 50-50.
You've got the Canadian accent. You definitely have a little.
A? Yeah. I have the Canadian accent, eh?
That's pretty good.
So go on.
Yeah, but so born, I was in Berlin, Germany. That's kind of, I connect a lot still with Germany, even though none of my blood is necessarily Germany. So my mother is born in Vienna, in Austria, and she kind of grew up there. I still have a lot of family there. Don't have any family in Berlin anymore since we moved, but I lived there for 8 years. Then my father's job, my father's from Saudi Arabia. So he basically did somewhat of an internship / training over there for 10 years. I spent 8 years in Germany. Then in 2000, we moved to Saudi Arabia, where he that's where his permanent position was. And yeah, so 2000 up until 2010, I lived in Saudi Arabia, where I started in the German international school initially. Then after, yeah, this is a long story. After like 9/11 and all that stuff with the invasion of Iraq, a lot of people left Saudi Arabia, but not a lot of people came back because unstable region and people were afraid. So I ended up being the only student in eighth grade in the German school in Saudi Arabia. So I'm like, this is not really fun. You know, the teachers were like, dude, this is awesome. You get one-on-one education over here. And I'm like, no, not really for me. You know, I want to go to school with friends. So I ended up switching to the American International School over there, graduated, and eventually came here for university, where I was planning to go back initially, but hey, didn't know I was going to meet my wife here, who is from a small town up north with the population of 1,500. And
not,
we eventually...
not that north, not that north. Remember, we're up north.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, it is.
It's pretty far north of Michigan.
Yeah, it's northern Michigan. So
okay,
north here enough. We are today with a small daughter on the way next month. So
congrats.
Yeah, thank you. So we got another football fan on the way. Hopefully, we already bought her some little cleats, you know, so she can wear. I'm not sure when the training will start, but project, I don't know, Alex Morgan or whoever you want to put out there is going to commence soon, you know. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, but that just goes back to Fabri, the globalization you had mentioned, you know, like with the league broadcast, it's possible nowadays to support teams that you don't necessarily have ties to in terms of being born there, but you can connect to them on so many different levels and follow them on social media and eventually plan some trips there with the airplane. You know, you hop in an airplane in 6 hours, you're in a different part of the world.
Yep.
And it still blows my mind how fast we can get to point A to point B now. And yeah, I'm already have a trip planned, not necessarily set in stone the dates, but I'm planning to go to a game hopefully soon here, whether that's this season or next season, hopefully in Serie A, we'll see. But it's definitely in planning phase now.
Well, that's fantastic.
Let us know for sure when you're thinking about doing that, because it's not going to be me, but I'm sure we can find someone who can help with some tickets in the Gradinato Nord.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Now with the connections, even through, you heard it, Matt, from last episode from Alex, maybe we can knock on the General Club UK to help us out. They always have on-standing four tickets for the Gradinato Nord. So if that's where you want to go, we can definitely help you out on that one. It's incredible. Like me being Genovese or part Genovese anyways, I lived that life in Genova to know what the life is there. But Matt is probably the one that can tell you that emotion that you get for the first time being a fan, then going to Genova, visiting the city, which is a hidden gem in Europe, because it's not on the beaten path of the typical places where you might want to go, maybe a little bit more for Europeans, but definitely not much for the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And then that emotion that even though he went to that last match where we knew we were already relegated against Bologna. So that was a match day 38 of Serie, last year of Serie A, but that emotions that the stadium alone, the Ferraris, considered one of the most beautiful in architecture and feeling and whatnot that, especially in Italy, anyways, offers. And then emotion, actually, I'll leave him to speak about the emotions and what he felt when he went there.
Well, it's like, so one of my really good friends in New York, who's back in Germany now, he's from Frankfurt, actually, he was a big Eintracht fan. And Eintracht are famous also for kind of being crazy fans.
Are you saying we're crazy, Matt?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's fair to say Genoa fans are crazy.
Crazy passionate, though, right?
We go to bars and you have a bunch of 50 odd Bayern fans turning around their head. They're around and saying, what are those 10 people cheering so loudly for over there? Like, what's going on? But his reaction to some of the videos from being there was like, oh, that's proper, like old school. Like, you're in this section and there's just flags being draped over from different sections. And obviously there's all these fans that are there and everyone is so dialed up for it. And it's not just kind of like there's some experiences that are sort of famous for, it's really loud before the first kick. And then after the game's going on, everyone's just kind of sitting. Like, it's you're so part of the event. You're not probably aren't going to see much of the match, but it was an amazing, amazing experience. And I think one of the most unique things for me was kind of like a crazy person. I traveled there alone. So I had a reason to be there. I was meeting up with family later in the week. I got hooked up with another Genoa fan, actually via Fabry, and basically just met a bunch of Genoa fans being pretty much fresh in the city. And it was amazing. We were out super late. We were going through the city doing stuff. And everywhere you went, you had someone to kind of chat it up with. So I don't know. It's a special thing to be a part of, because I think you said it right. Like there's just something different about the fan base here. And you even hear that every now and then from some fans that maybe are part of other Italian fan clubs or something in the US. And they just say, well, you know, we went to try to watch a game with so-and-so fan club and it just wasn't quite the same, you know, because everything's just a little bit more dialed up. And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. And that just reaffirms my view that I have of Genoa fans, because whenever I go to a game, I don't go there to just sit and watch football. Right. I go there to like feel it, you know. When you're a fan, you are a part of the match, you have an impact. And if I just sit down and watch, like my feet get like nervous and itchy because I want to stand. I cannot sit while I watch football. At home on the couch, sure, maybe I can do that. But when I'm there, I have to stand. So one time, I went to an Austria-Vienna game when I was in Vienna. And my first game that I went there, when I was kind of like tasting everything out and just checking out the club, mm-hmm. I was sitting on not the main stand where the ultras were and the fan clubs. So I was just watching. And second half, I swear I found any kind of way to get to the stand where the actual fans were. I'm like, I have to get at least close or I have to get in. I wasn't able to get in. Yeah. So I just grabbed like an empty seat that was kind of close. And I'm like, okay, at least I feel I'm a little bit more part of it.
Part of the thing.
And yeah, and same thing for Genoa now, for the Gradinata North. I would absolutely love to be there. For me, there is no question. If I can get a ticket there, it would have to be at least extremely close, you know, as close as I could possibly get.
Yeah. We'll find you one. Don't worry. One way or another, we'll find you one.
Yeah, I really,
that's the power of the internet too, right?
Right, exactly.
So let us, we'll definitely keep in touch. We'll definitely put you also on our chat that we have. We've also advertised it for whomever wants to speak and listen and talk about Genoa in English. We have a WhatsApp chat called We Are Genoa, and we'll definitely add you to it because it's definitely important. It's important to have you, and it's important to be part of this community that it's starting to grow more and more. And I'm actually loving it. I don't know about what you think about it, Matt, but I think it's wonderful.
It's crazy. We have, I don't know how many people are in the group chat now, but it feels like we've got like 30 people in there. And it's always I still love the Genoa Club New York chat, because I'm not actually learning Italian. I'm just Google translating it all the time. And I find like, the reactions to that are like hilarious. I still remember there was some comment before the beginning of the season last year about Serie A. It's like, one of the guys said, it looks like he went and had a snack because he was kind of like his belly was protruding through the shirt a little bit. It's just like stuff like that. It's hilarious to me. But our We Are Genoa chat's amazing. Like everyone's into it. Everybody's got an opinion. They're all dialed in. And it's just fun to be part of that community. It's cool.
And not to mention, we have also a German fan. Whenever you have chance, Hamada, we have from episode 4, Stefan from Mainz.
Mainz.
Yeah.
And he is another foreigner, quote unquote foreigner, that the club chose him as well.
Stefano is a really funny guy. He's a really cool guy. Very, very diehard Genoa. I think he's been to a bunch of like games. He's definitely been and seen the teams train in Austria too, I know.
Yeah, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but more or less you can listen to episode 4 to getting a little bit better insight. And forgive me, Stefan. Yeah, forgive me, Stefan, if I don't remember too hard exactly the detail, but I do remember Genoa went for a friendly match in Mainz. And that's one of his first experience. Yes. There's one of those summer games. And after that, he did for sure go one time to, I can't remember that name, in Austria, if I'm not mistaken, to the summer retreat. And he went there as well. And again, he dove into the cause, and, you know, he does follow his mind or whatnot on the Bundesliga, but at the same time, Genoa is, you know, part of him as well now, and happy and proud of it too. And that's the part that makes, makes it the cool part. Exactly. So, tell me a little bit more, Hamada, like where this love came from. Like, what's the first thing that caught your eye?
So the first thing that caught my eye actually was when I saw that Genoa got relegated. And, you know, every season I go on LiveScore, the app, and well, not even every season, every day I'm on the app. You know, I'm like, what kind of game can I watch? So I check like the top leagues, Dutch league. I'm seeing who goes up, who goes down. At the end of the season, I saw Genoa and I'm like, hey, I've heard of these guys before, you know. They're not like a small team, like just like a regular team with yo-yo club that goes up and down, stuff like that. So I took a little bit of deeper dive. I'm like, okay, you know, it happened. Didn't think much of it. And then the season started and I started like following their results and I favorited them on LiveScore. And then chose just to check on their results every single weekend or midweek game as well. And I actually... Now comes the funny part that got me really sucked in, but I play Football Manager on PC.
Atta boy.
Exactly. So then I always try to find teams that I personally don't feel like they are where they belong, whether usually that are second division or something like that. And I don't choose teams easily because it's a big commitment to me, a big time commitment. And I researched basically everything I could about the team. I look at videos of the city. So I checked out Genoa on YouTube, city tours. I go on Google Maps. I go into like Street View. And I go into like the small alleys here and there. And then I go up to the stadium too and just look at how it looks outside. So I don't make these decisions very lightly. And then, of course, I researched the fans. And just like I said, the more I researched, the more I got into it. And then I started playing with the team. And you got even more connected. And I every now and then I was able to catch some games, but I don't know. Over here in the US, I know City A is on ESPN, but City A B is kind of hard to watch unless you're like watching the YouTube videos and the YouTube recap. So I started with that and just got more and more familiar. And yeah, that kind of is what got me really started. I've tried to get a jersey too. The website that I got, I ordered one, but the website that I got said they were out of stock. I'm like, it's all good. Keep the deposit and just send it to me whenever you get one. But they ended up sending it back. I'm like, it's probably a good idea anyway, because they probably either might forget about it too. But yeah, that's kind of what got me started. And that's really what got me falling in love with the city itself and made me so desperate to want to visit. And the city, I mean, everything speaks for the team. You know, you have the city, you have the colors, you have the fans, you have the team itself, you have the passion, the songs and the chants, and everything just makes you feel more and more connected to the team. So for me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I'm like, historic team that isn't where it should be right now. It should be way higher. The history is there. And yeah, we did end up winning Serie B, by the way, by a record margin. I think it was like 89 points. Coda led us to the title with his top scoring. And yeah, so that's how I got connected really hard to that team.
It's a good thing you didn't play Football Manager last year, because it would have been Goran Pandev, 45, as our top striker on the team. But
yeah.
Well, actually, we still had Destro back then. It just was.
Well, it's a good thing that you started to see them in their first fall, like at their fall, and living that experience of, you know, pointing towards the top again. Where, as you said, also especially from a fan base, from many. So I'm not saying that because I'm obviously biased on the Genoa side, but from many, it's a fan base that deserves champions rather than.
Exactly.
Relegation. So, you know, even though it is, you know, it still is the sixth largest city in Italy by population.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's and divided in two because of the other, again, the other team that I don't want to talk about. But It is a beautiful city, and we'll definitely keep in touch, but I'll be able to give you tips and whatnot for when you're ready to go, and we'll definitely obviously help you out to get the ticket well deserved to be in the Gradinata, because for what you said, it's well deserved to be in Gradinata.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
And with respects to the jerseys, you'll hear it also from the chat and whatnot. We have a whole bunch of ideas. We've been back and forth talking about the kits. Everybody's this obsessed. Year with Castore. Yeah. Next year, mark.
By the way, did you see the ones they just did for Ireland? They look so terrible. I don't know if they had their first international match the other night. I don't know if it's tonight or the other night, but it just, we're not Castore fans. I guess we'll get that out of the way.
We're all hoping for them to get ditched, essentially. We don't know if and when is that going to happen, but I'm sure that that mumbling, that anger against the Castore is definitely out there. We can only hope in that one can improve from their mistakes and their, you know, flaws.
Yeah, brilliant.
But we'll see. I mean, a lot of people are still with the Kappa, which was the one right before that, which was a lot nicer for a lot of aspects, and especially definitely on their merchandise was qualitatively actually very high, besides the fact of very skin tight type of look at Matt. That he needs like what, a 3XL, 4XL? No,
like a 6XL. I was so disappointed.
And he's not a big guy.
I actually think someone sort of knew I was. So I went to the Genoa store when I was in Genoa. Excuse me. I always do that, by the way.
That's okay. Genoa means Genova in English. So it's okay.
That's my excuse. I tried on like four different jerseys and none of them fit because they're just like the skin tight, like combat pro. This is the Kappa season still. And I actually loved it. They had, because no one wears a 3XL there, they had like the first away shirt that they did, which was a pretty traditional one with like the Rosso blue kind of across the
horizontally.
I love that. Yeah. But it just didn't fit. And I ended up, I think I literally left that place only with an espresso mug because I couldn't get anything else that fit or looked right. But they're really quality. And I think they could also do like replica versions of the same things in the future or something. So we'll see. Who knows who's going to be the sponsor anyway, but Hamada, have you found the season so far following in Serie B? What's your take on it? I mean, it's been a good run of form lately.
Yeah, lately is good. I am hopeful that they can snatch even the top. No, not even. That's too far, isn't it?
Oh, it's
so many points.
It is pretty far. It is six now. Eight matches is still.
It's possible. It's not impossible, but it's possible. And I mean, hopeful, definitely promotion. Yes. Little shout out to my Südtirol friends so amazing seeing them up there from Serie C last year. I don't know how that's possible, but those are the kind of stories that we need in football more of, you know. And
I agree.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping for a double there. Get Genoa and Südtirol up there. Can you imagine that, Matt?
Actually, we never thought about that. But can you imagine directly promotion? Then others can play for the third spot. But Südtirol surpassing Frosinone, Genoa and Südtirol. Sorry for my accent. I'm not saying it German or Austrian, but Südtirol going up to Serie B directly with Genoa. That would be like something else. That would
be pretty amazing.
Dream scenario for me right there. Yeah.
I love like the Südtirol area. To me, it's just like beautiful, heart breathtaking area with amazing chalets, food, you know, everything like the mulled wine, Bolzano in Italian.
Yep.
It's such a beautiful little city. All that area is beautiful.
Magical, I remember visiting.
The Dolomiti, which is that part of the Alps in Italy, have this nude rock that has that specific color that in the sunset, it actually looks pink, but not like your baby pink, but it's it's just like a beautiful backdrop. Anyways, just beautiful.
Yeah, I did want to give a shout out to Italy, though, in general with jerseys. and kits, I feel like they do a lot better job than a lot of other leagues. With just plain, in a lot of other leagues, is just plain jerseys that are like some of the clean looks ones look great,
right.
But I feel like Italy in general, there's a lot more interesting kits, and I feel like a lot of these kit makers that are present in Italy have a lot more guts and just to be creative and stuff. Well, Adidas and Nike, some of them are cool, but they're also very repetitive, you know.
Exactly. We actually have another new fan. His name is Eddie. He has been in the in Alabama, but he's been into that area of expertise with respects to kits and whatnot, and he was talking to us. Exactly. I hope that if we ever do change, we don't get Adidas. And I was like, oh, just curiosity, because as an ignorant fan and whatnot, I've seen it with AC Milan, now with, mm-hmm. with Juventus. I'm associating it mm-hmm. to, like, you know, prestige type of...
You forget they have Milan for a long time. That's right.
Teams, exactly. And now Italy, right? But Italy, the national team?
Yeah, well, those kids... Adidas, I feel like that's not fair, because Adidas has done a great job lately. But I think Hamad is on the something interesting there, because... I feel like, I don't know the actual statistics for this, there are more kind of like underrepresented kit makers in Italy that you don't find often in other places. Obviously, there's no other place where you can find an Emporio Armani kit in the first edition anywhere, which is hilarious. And that's maybe a bad example, because I don't think they're that good. But
very bad. Mean, sorry, Napoli fans, but very
but bad. You have Mizuno, who I guess are doing Bochum's kits and everything in the Bundesliga too. They're Südtirol, and you've got like the Zeus kits that were made for some of the teams in years gone by, and Macron and some of these other brands. I always liked Lotto when Genoa had Lotto, and even though those designs weren't really wacky. And I think also just like the identity, like the base identity of so many clubs, it's very distinctive. It's not mm-hmm. red shirts, red shorts, or something like that. There's a little bit more design to it than that.
Well, you probably learned now, Hamada, doing a little bit of history search and whatnot, that on the main kit, so your home kit, Genoani do not want to one of those really? Manufacturers to screw,
changes.
Excuse my language, that, but screw up that one, because that has to stay as close as possible to the original.
Right.
So they have very limited. Now, the only one that I've seen that wandered a little bit into imagination and give a little bit of fantasy to that was actually Kappa, which one season we saw those a little bit of a, you know, shaded stripes, and another season was seeing the map underlying into the red and blue of the city of Genoa, which was, I kind of found it to be a little bit interesting, a little bit different. Otherwise, you kind of have to stick to those red and blue and with those specific tones, because other seasons we've seen other ones that did play around with those colors, and it's just not the Genoa colors. So you need the dark navy blue and that deep red, blood red type of thing, which is the rosso blue, essentially, right?
Which I think they should never change. I mean, looks wise, amazing, can't beat it. So
it's the color of the heart, the red and blue, right?
Pretty much, exactly.
So I don't know if you have any other questions there, Matt.
I don't think so.
So I wanted to definitely shout out to all those fans out there. Take that courage, write down, even on our social pages. So whether it's through La Lantana, whether it's through the General Club New York, or mine, which is the General Club Toronto, so you have it on Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter, or as Hamada did, not knowing. And actually, I might ask you afterwards, after recording, how can we reach that type of, fan base that might be interested in these beautiful colors, but not know about where to reach out, who to reach out, whatnot. But nevertheless, so drop a comment. I hope this the podcast helps a little bit for fans out there to get, I have already heard comments about, oh, I'm glad that you guys are out there. Gives us a little bit more insight about Genoa news in English and so on, because there's not much out there other than reading. There's a lot more compared to the past, obviously, on the written portion, but on the audio part, it's very limited or close to nothing. But nevertheless, do reach out to us, direct messaging, or drop us a comment. Likes, it's always important for us. So I wanted to personally, and obviously Matt as well, wanted to thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. It was a tremendous, honor to have you on here to hear your story about how, even though quote unquote young, the experience, and you using your words, and the cause has caught you, as the romance is there and so on, and you do your investigation, so you're very thorough, and before you choose, I'm still, again, repeating your words, it takes time, and it reminds me a little bit about Eddie as well, when he was saying, you know, it took me a while. Actually, he said 20 years, 30 years before he chose a team, and then he chose Genoa.
Yeah, he did a lot of research. He had a lot of research that he
Exactly. And it's just so one, it's, I don't know, it just makes my heart happy, if I may say. So I wanted to thank you again for joining us on our podcast. It was tremendous. And I'm happy actually to have met you and to be part of our family now. And so thank you again for joining us, Hamada. If anyone wants to reach out to you, how can they reach?
Yeah, I was actually going to, first of all, thank you as well, and Matt, for having me here. It's an absolute pleasure to talk about this amazing club and the fans and the city and just everything that the club touches, you know. Mm-hmm. From you to the thousands of fans that see the team week in and week out, it's an honor as well. And how can people reach me? I will actually send you my Instagram, and Twitter is not so active. Probably my Instagram is the most active. Probably on there, just private message me. And don't mind my story. It's filled with a lot of football. So that's mainly what goes on in my life. Whenever I don't know where home is, I take a picture of a football field and I'm like, hey, I'm home now, you know. Yeah. So
there you go.
So that's what it is.
Well, you never know. You might be opening up.
Yes. Yeah. I play. I tore my ACL 2 summers ago. And I've had to really adapt the way I play because I had to slow down. And I used to be a Gattuso kind of player. Not so technical, but like kind of like just power up and down the field, tackles and like stuff. An engine. Can't do that anymore. Now I'm kind of like Andrea Pirlo, just like an orchestrator in the back. I don't tackle anymore.
Or language style these days.
Yeah, I've had to adjust the way I play. And but I still play it every single second I can get out there. So got planning on Plu to play this Friday for the first time outside, if the weather allows. So
that's great. I hope it goes well. I play in a... with a group of friends too. I'm a keeper usually. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But that's awesome.
That's easier on the injury as well, right? Just a couple. Oh, hey, wait. That's all. Matt is like what, 6?
If I actually, I have terrible posture, but around like 6'9" if I stand up straight. So.
Oh wow.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. You'd be straight on my first team on my football manager. Yeah. Exactly. Get right in goal. It's
like, whatever the keeper for the Netherlands is, it's like that basic idea pretty much. So
so I was trying to say before that, you never know, you might be opening up the new Genoa Club Michigan or something. You never know, like who
I would be open to do that. Let's do it.
All right, so thank you everyone for listening to us. We will could still continue next week, even though there is no match for next week, as we have the Italian break coming up on this weekend. So that's why we didn't talk about match day 31. We'll talk about it next episode, next week. But nevertheless, as always, never forget Forza Genoa.
Forza Genoa.
You've listened to La Lanterna, a spotlight on Italian football, a podcast powered by Genoani Si Resta. Thank you for listening and see you next week.